Revolution narrows statesmanship's focus to first principles regarding foreign affairs, too. The fundamentals never change. Foreign policy must serve internal needs first. It must speak softly and carry a big stick. In revolutionary times or times of profound discord, this approach is essentially important. Minimize interference in others' affairs so as to minimize occasions for others' interference in ours. And maintain such military capacity as would discourage anyone from taking advantage of our temporary distraction. The overarching challenge is to secure such respect from other peoples as may be needed to live safely and without interference as our body politic secures internal peace. George Washington's farewell, again, some of this is just not attainable. And it's not attainable because, look, the superstructure government that has been erected says that America's got to have a standing army. And you got about 10 million reasons, direct reasons, why that standing army is not going to be dismantled short of civil disobedience from the states themselves. In other words, states saying, look, you can forget the Dick Act. We're not sending our National Guard boys to Iraq anymore. That's what ought to happen anyways. You ought to be saying, hey, Trump, I didn't sign up and I didn't vote for you so you could send my kid to Syria. I didn't vote for you so you can continue to escalate the Afghan war, et cetera, et cetera. Responsible governments in the states would simply have conventions that would say, look, of course you have to have people that want to do this. We're a warlike people. We don't. But that doesn't mean that there are not unwarlike people out there that can make common cause together. And Codavilla's point is a good one. Why force those people to bake cakes for sodomites? Why force those people to live in urban cities where babies are murdered every day and they have to subsidize it? Why force people to live and acknowledge that a little boy must be called a little girl when they go like, no, I'm not going to do it. I don't want to do it. That's his overriding point. And he's correct. Contrary to Washington's warnings, U.S. foreign policy has oscillated between support for and opposition to governments and factions entangled in the Middle East's perennial struggle between Sunni and Shia Muslims. Like its predecessors, the Trump administration seems preoccupied, for example, with the question of which sect will hold the mayoralty of Mosul. That's a pretty good point. Yes, it's in America's interest to determine who the mayor of Mosul is going to be. Mayor Church, I want to vote in that election. Do you want to vote in the next election for the president of Syria? You want to go to Damascus and vote in that too? But attention to such questions exacerbates divisions that already exist among Americans. Our incapacity to make lasting changes in other people's arrangements with one another continues to subtract from the respect that we Americans need in order to secure ourselves from foreign interference at a time when this is crucial. Same is true of official U.S. pronouncements on world events that are not of our making and are beyond our control. Like I was saying earlier, who in the hell appointed the Brookings Institute to make universal American pronouncements about what American foreign policy is and ought to be? Who told the American Enterprise Institute or the Heritage Foundation they could do that? As a matter of fact, doesn't it inspire fear that we have entities that are so powerful and that think that they can? I ask this question often. Could the state of Georgia today war against the government of Syria, knowing that the Syrians are allied with the Iranians and the Russians? And if so, is Georgia willing? I don't know how many young men live in Georgia. Let's say 2.5 million. Is Georgia willing to lose 1.25 million of them in a shooting war to do what? Mayor Church, please, we got to stop the theory again. What? You mean the sarin gas that we probably gave to ISIS for false flag operators? This is insanity here. Insert state here. Would your state be in Afghanistan? Answer, very unlikely. I can't say no for sure, but very highly unlikely. Well, there you have your answer right there. Would your state, if it were allowed to choose, Would you choose to continue 17-year-long operations in Afghanistan with your soldiers? And hey, no debt. You don't get to ring a debt. No. This is a real shooting war. We got rid of that printing press. Oh, no, you got to go door to door and collect gold and silver coins. And if you don't have those, we're going to take items of property and we're going to sell them to people that will give us gold and silver coins for them. Hey, that motorcycle there, oh, I know you love to ride the hog every weekend. Well, guess what, Charlie? Sorry. Warmer dropped the big one, man. War's on. Would you do it? You believe that deeply in occupation of a 7,000-year-old peoples, namely people of Afghanistan? Really? What do you hope to accomplish? You think they're going to set up Hooterville in Afghanistan and the locals are all going to go, hey, I think I'd like to move to Hooterville. They have a Hooters there, too. That is a great place. Folks, you see the madness of this. This is madness. Only a people that are either too fat, too drunk, or too lazy sit around and do nothing about it.